Well, hi, folks. Jack here with another episode of the Survival Podcast. Today is Tuesday, June the 10th, 2025. It is episode 3,685, and we are live, at least for those tuning in for the live stream. I have a feeling, since we're talking a little bit about the gloom and the doom today, we'll have hundreds of people in on the live. I could do a show about, you know, things that will improve the life of 9 out of 10 people who give it a shot, and we get maybe 100, and you do something about all of the bad in the world, and everybody shows up. But we do need to do this once in a while. We really do, all kidding aside. We do have something unraveling right now. The L.A. riots. It's not the L.A. riots. That's just the place they decided to start because it's an iconic thing. When you say L.A. riots, everybody who's, you know, let's say, I'm going to say over 40 probably thinks back to early 90s and those L.A. riots. And that's just a thing now. And even a lot of people who were too young to even know what was going on at that time, it's been put into enough media, it's been talked about enough that even people that are probably 30 years old weren't even born yet when the Rodney King riots happened. You still know, right? And I do think it's an overriding plan, so we're going to talk about that. Why riots are probably coming soon to a city near you, we'll be talking about that and what you should do about it. But a better approach to this is the understanding of two fundamentals. One, it is not organic. It is being organized from a central planning level. Okay, that doesn't necessarily mean the government's doing it, though there are certainly actors in the government who are all for it. But this is of the ilk of George Soros, and I'm not saying specifically George because he's retired. He turned it all over to Alex, right? I'm saying those types of people. There are probably multiple organizations involved in some really shitty stuff going on. The other side of it, though, is in the words of Mr. Miyagi from the original Karate Kid, the ones that didn't suck, best block is no be there, right? So we're going to talk about how to know if your city is the kind of place this can happen and to how to identify the areas of your city where if it happens, it's likely to be a real problem. And then it's up to you to like realize to follow one of the laws of life, which is don't go to stupid places and do stupid things with stupid people, because that always results in problems. You end up either being called the deceased or the defendant or the patient when you do stuff like that. We're also going to talk about a term that gets thrown around the Bitcoin space a lot, but we're not really going to talk about it from a Bitcoin standpoint other than Bitcoin's a solution to the problem. But there's an economist, actually an engineer turned economist, an investment manager, very switched on person called Lynn Alden. And Lynn constantly says, nothing stops this train. Well, Lynn did one of the major talks at the Bitcoin conference out in Vegas just a few weeks ago, like a couple weeks ago, I guess. And Lynn's talk was on nothing stops this train. And Lynn said something that I think is something many of us know, but maybe a lot of other people need to understand it. Nothing stops this train. It's not about Bitcoin. It's about fiat and monetary debt and where we're headed. I'm going to let you know that like one of the biggest fiat bankers in the world, Jamie Dimon, just said something that's, if you really take it in, it's kind of earth shattering what he's saying about nothing stopping this train, though he's not the one using that term. And the M2 money supply, which is the largest statistic to track the monetary supply, how much money they've printed, has just hit an all-time high. There's a little interesting tidbit when we look at that number in the total debt, and that is the delta between the two. Then I'm going to go into like five. I think I put in my notes the five biggest. These aren't the five biggest. I don't know what the biggest opportunities are. And biggest is subjective, because the person that wants a solo entrepreneurship thing is going to immediately lock them out of themselves out of certain things. It might be bigger opportunities. But I would say these are five really big opportunities that individuals can pursue at their own level and even combine some of them in the coming 10 years. These problems will not go away, and that's what I want to wrap up with. But that means that you need to do things for you and your family And you need to be taking proactive steps right now, because if you're not, you're plumb going to get rolled over by this, because no one's going to save you. The government is not going to fix it. I think there was a fear that if Trump got elected, it would actually lead to greater apathy. And it may have for a bit, but I think the reality is setting in. And when I get to that part, I want to talk a little bit about the Trump-Elon feud and how that might not be what it looks like. But also why something like that is kind of inevitable with two personalities like that sooner or later. But it actually shows you something really important to, like, grow the F up and accept, to, in the words of St. Paul in the Bible, right? That now you are a man, you should put away childish things like belief and fantasies. Because when you make decisions in your life based on fantasy, you know, if they turn out to be the proper decision to make, it's coincidence, not causation, okay? So we're going to be talking about all of that today. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor day number one today is Above Phone. Now, I was just talking about some of the constants in government, and here's one of the constants in government. Governments will surveil and spy on their citizens. All governments. I don't care which one. The Roman Republic. The Roman Empire spied and surveilled on their citizens. The Soviet Union did it. The United States government does it. Just about every government that's ever existed has surveilled and spied on its people. The ones you think of as good guys, the ones you think of as bad guys, all of them. Iceland, France, for God's sake, Rhode Island spies on its people. I know it's not a nation, but it's still a government, right? And that's something we need to accept. But today we have a fundamental reality that wasn't true, you know, just 50 years ago. Everybody walks, and hell, it wasn't really true 25 years ago when I say everybody, but pretty much everybody today walks around with a little box like this, and their government uses it to collect information on them because the carriers give it to them, and the app makers give it to them, and the device makers give it to the government, and private corporations just buy your data at will. You can make it go away with Above Phone, but if you're not ready to move over to Above Phone yet, you still might want to get by Above Phone today, and I'll tell you why. They have a report out right now, 5 must-change privacy settings for your Android or iPhone. So even if you're not going to give it up yet, even if you're not going to, you know, cross over to a new platform yet and go into total freedom mode, you might want to, like, at least learn about some things you can do to make yourself a little bit more protected from the device that you carry and rely on so much. Check it out today at AbovePhone.com. And if you do want to pick up an Above Phone, $75 off any phone at AbovePhone.com if you're an MSB member. They also have the Above Tablet and the Above Book. Both are awesome. I've got my Above Book right back over here. I love my Above Book. It might be the most valuable technological thing I've added to my life since finding out about Above Phone, honestly. I actually think it's probably more beneficial to more people than even the phone itself. But again, you get $75 off an Above Phone, and you get a person from Above Phone who will walk you through the onboarding experience into any of your devices. The nice thing about the Above Book, and I have never bought a tablet, so I don't know, but the Above Book, there's a whole series of videos right on it. You just start watching them, and it tells you how to do everything. And my one bit of advice to the folks at Above Phone, turn the volume up on those videos. They need to be redone, and you need to turn the volume. The only way I can really hear them is to put headphones on and listen to them. Anyway, other than that, it's great. So check it out today, AbovePhone.com. Next up today, K9 Academy. We went from high tech. Now let's go to kind of low tech. Dogs are pretty low tech. We've been working with dogs as humans for over 10,000 years. They are great companions if they're properly trained. If you want to know how to train your best friend to be not just your best friend, but one of your best assets on your homestead and in your home, then get on over to K9 Academy. Joel trains super high-end, highly efficient protection dogs. Not everybody wants one, though, but the stuff you can learn at K9 Academy can help you do that, or just, you know, train your dog to be a good citizen on the homestead. Train your dog to watch your front gate. You can learn to do anything with a dog that can be done with a dog at K9Academy.us. Check them out today. With that, let's get on back into the main subject today. Again, I am on my own today, which is pretty normal for me. But I will remind you, and it's not hard to remember if you're watching the camera and you look. at any given time, it's not hard to remember I only have one good eye. And that means if you want me to see your question or your comment, you put the word comment or question in all caps in the live stream. And if I see it, I'll star it. And if I star it, I'll hit it at the end as a part of the Q&A or comment and response, if you want to call it that. All right. So let's start off with the LA riots. And, you know, I know there's people doing deep dives into it and they're tracking the money and everything. And I'm glad they are because that's important. The reality, though, is if you need evidence right now to convince you that this is not an organic thing, then no amount of evidence will help you because you're either completely bought into the narrative that you're fed by CNN and MSNBC, et cetera, or you're just not smart. And exactly where your IQ is, I don't know, but it's somewhere south of 80 if you can't just look at this and say, you know what, this is not an organic thing. It's not like a bunch of people sitting around in L.A., they're just sitting around all these, like, you know, gangbangers and Antifa people, and all, they're all sitting around, and somebody say, hey, I don't like what ICE is doing. We should all get together and go out in the streets. And then you start gathering up and making cardboard signs and organically go out and protest. This is, you know, I'll tell you some of the things that we do know have happened. Once again, pallets of bricks and pallets of cinder blocks have shown up in places where nobody asked for them. That would be an indicator. But there's, you know, that's circumstantial-ish evidence. We don't really know that nobody ordered those. We probably should accept that's true, but it's plausible that, you know, some guy on his truck put them in the wrong place, or there actually is a project going to go on there soon. But it's impossible to refute things like seeing trucks pull up, hand out boxes, organizers. First of all, if you're organic, you don't have central organizers, right? So you have organizers opening the boxes and pulling out things like masks to deal with being like maced or tear gassed, and face shields for the same purpose, and literally handing them out to the protesters. That's not an organic movement or organic protest. And son of a gun, right on schedule, a couple days into it, all of a sudden there's protests in Dallas. There's protests in New York City. There's protests in Chicago. Standing in solidarity with the protesters against ICE in Los Angeles. If you believe a word of that, you do have an IQ sub 80, maybe sub 75, which is where the court would order you to be under the supervision of an adult because you're not capable of standing for yourself in a court of law. Okay? That's what I'm saying. That's how dumb you are if you believe any of that. I don't care how much you hate Trump. I don't care how much you hate both sides, because God knows I do. I don't care how much you hate government. I don't care how much you hate the system or systems. If you're smart, you know, S goes at the end of systems. I don't care how much you're opposed to what's going on in Palestine, which is not what they're pissed off about. I don't care how much you think borders should be open. This is not a fucking protest. This is a series of intentional riots. And there's a very simple formula for this. Once you have money and a national level organization, you can kick these things off very simply, because here's what you do. You take professional paid agitators, and we know they exist. And by the way, if the Trump administration means one fucking thing about what it says, it will use, I don't remember which U.S. code it is, but there's a U.S. code law, federal law, that states if you cross a state border with the intent of participating in or causing a riot, it is a federal crime, and it, like, the minimum sentence is 10 years. Right? The fuckers doing it need to be found and need to put in federal prison. That will start to slow this whole process down, but it won't. It won't. And so you move in your professional organizers and agitators. You have local professional agitators in different places. And then you pay people to show up and hold signs and peacefully protest. And the majority of those people do. They're dupes. They don't know. But you get something going. It's very important where you do it, though. You need a downtown area, okay? And it needs to be a downtown where you start. Doesn't mean it will stay there. It needs to be a downtown area, and it needs to be close to where shit can be screwed up, close to the heart of government for that city. But it has to be on the side of the city that is directly adjacent to high crime area, which is not hard to find in any city. There's probably several places will meet that description, but it has to be at least one of them. And once you get it going, then people start, you got a crowd of people in the street, they're chanting whatever, a certain amount of looky-loos will show up and be like, what's going on? This makes a bigger crowd. Some of those looky-loos will be like, yeah, screw Trump. What are we protesting? It's against Trump, right? Yeah, immigration, screw immigration, right? Whatever, that doesn't matter, right? That will start cheering and chanting. Then very quickly through this high crime area will spread the word, we fitting to have an opportunity to go get us some free shit. So all those people will show up in the guise of being part of the protest. Then it will organically grow from there. But it was like planting a GMO seed and calling the ear of corn that comes off of the plant organic, right? No, but it will catch fire, its own level of self-propagation at that point. And as soon as the lights go out, yeah, sometimes before, but definitely once the lights go out, a few cars will start burning, some shit will start getting thrown, the police will move in, and mayhem will commence. And once the mayhem commences, all them people that came in from that high crime area, they start doing things to really fuel the protest, to really demonstrate how upset they are about political policies and how much they are actually there for the sole benefit of helping poor illegal immigrants. Because we all know how you do this. Well, you do it by raiding the Apple store and stealing a bunch of iPads and iPhones and stuff like that. You do it by breaking into restaurants and raiding a sushi restaurant. You do it by breaking in, and these are all places that actually happen. You do it by breaking into a place that sells appliances and stealing a big screen TV. This all happened last night, by the way. That's how you show the man. You show the man by breaking into a Japanese restaurant and stealing yellowtail sashimi. That is absolutely the way that you make sure that the president of the United States knows that you are opposed to what ICE is doing. And this happens over and over and over and over again. This is the summer of love from 2020 all over again without the COVID. But we're bringing the masks anyway. No one wears the mask until they're protesting. Then they're worried about COVID 5 years after it started, right? No. Then once you get it going in one place, your dream, if you're one of the people actually pulling the strings, can we get it going nationwide? The long-term goal, and every time they do this, they try to get it there, and it comes close sometimes, but it's never actually gone over, is complete mayhem coast to coast in every major city of the United States. To where this is Cloward-Priven strategy on steroids. Push the country to the brink of bankruptcy. Don't worry, we'll get there next. And then cause civil disobedience to the point where the government and the nation itself literally collapses. Well, Jack, as an anarchist, you should be for the collapse of government. I am for the peaceful transition from a governed society to a self-governed society. I am not for allowing people to ransack the shit out of people and property all over the country in the name of something that most of them doing it do not give the square root of fuck all about. But there's some peaceful protesters out there. Yeah, I don't care. I don't care. I'm not worried about the peaceful protester. This is how I feel about protesting. You are free to protest anything you want. Protesting is completely legal. Marching up and down the street, as long as you're not blocking traffic, is protesting. Carrying signs is protesting. Sitting in a park and chanting some bullshit that I don't care about is protesting. There's 100 other things that I can say that are protesting and legal and protected by the Constitution of the United States of America. Okay? Here's some things that are not protesting and not legal and they're simply crime. Setting fire to buildings. That would be fucking arson. Setting fire to vehicles. That would be fucking arson. Both of those are felonies in every freaking state in the country. Those are felonies. Hurling bricks and cinder blocks at anybody, right? Unless that person is Jason Voorhees trying to kill you or something, if you're hurling bricks and cinder blocks at somebody, cops are, I don't even care if it's a cop. I don't care if it's some fat guy walking down the street eating a hot dog. That is assault with a deadly weapon. That is a felony. You should go to fucking prison so long they have to pump sunlight into a straw for you. That is a crime. I don't care if it goes next to or is part of or adjacent to a protest. It is not protesting. It is a crime. You know what else is legal? Driving. Driving your car is legal. Driving at 150 miles an hour in a school zone is not. And it endangers lives. I'm not talking about the guy on a 65 mile an hour freeway doing 71. I get that, but there's a point where we all go, yeah, that fucker needs to go to jail. You're endangering people's lives. It's not consensual because I didn't consent to you driving on a public street that's for everybody at 115 miles an hour where kids are playing, you asshole, right? It doesn't matter what you're doing. What else is legal, you know? Owning a gun is legal. Shooting somebody with it who wasn't a threat to anybody is murder. You see how this works? We should not be conflating the criminal activity with the protest. The press does this, or as Billy Bond calls them, the prestitutes, right? The prestitutes is exactly what they do. They take something that any common, everyday, average, halfway thinking, fucking, you know, one point above idiot level IQ person would go, that's wrong, and they conflate it with something that you have an emotional attachment to. And if you can conflate it with a few things like the right of people to protest. Well, hell, we're taught that from the time we're in like third grade in school, that that's a right. And the universal hatred of Donald Trump, who is obviously a Nazi. And then you have just a flea brain like Gavin Newsom. And what does Newsom start saying? This is Donald Trump's mess. This is Donald Trump's mess. This is Donald Trump's mess. I listened to him talk for 90 seconds. My IQ went down 2 points. I had to eat some mushrooms to bring it back up. Okay, after listening to his dumbass, but I heard him say 3 times in 90 seconds, this is Donald Trump's mess. No, ass fuck, it's your state. You're the governor of the state. You and that shithead Karen Bass are the ones that let this turn into a disaster. And it will spread across this country. I don't care how many. I mean, they're going to send the Marines. Yes, so what? So what? And when they bust a bunch of skulls, they'll put out a bunch of shit on TV and talk about how these poor peaceful protesters were abused by a bunch of jarheads. It's going to spread. It's already in Dallas. I think it's already in Atlanta. It's definitely in New York. It's already in Chicago. By the end of next week, there'll be 20, 30 cities with this shit going on. And it will all be, every fucking one of them, Democrat-controlled and led cities. Everyone, I'll defy you to show me otherwise. Even if you find a decent-sized city that's not controlled like by Democrats like Fort Worth, about 1.1 million people, that's a big city. Yeah, they might do some protesting there, but they won't do any rioting there because if they do, they'll get their teeth knocked out the way that they should. And I don't apologize for that. I don't want to hear anybody's shit in this ever again. You're wasting your breath with me or your keystrokes, angry people, about what we need to protest. I just told you, protest your fucking ass off. Protest till you're blue in the face. Protest till the cows come home and the chickens leave. That's all fine. When you burn people's buildings down, and who are they? Who's actually being harmed in this? The people that live there. The people that own businesses there. You know, we need to protect minorities. Dumbass, most of the businesses in these areas are run, owned, and operated by minorities. You dumbass. I'm not sure what that means, Nisbet. Who is Lysander Spooner says, Jackie, it wasn't a mess until Trump sent in ICE. I don't know if you're being funny and trying to be sarcastic, and if so, I'll give you a pass. If you mean it, you're a fucking idiot, okay? And I don't think he does. I think he's being – I hope you're being sarcastic, man, because I don't even have the time to deal with that level of stupid today. You know, there's this idea that every contentious concept is worthy of debate. It, after a certain point, it isn't anymore. We've already done this. It wasn't all fine. But I think he's being sarcastic. I'm hoping I'll hear back from him. If not, I might mute him for a while so I don't have to listen to him. Because there are those people. And they're just, and someone here says, Nisbet says libertarians are the L and LGBTQ. There are some special libertarians, and they're special libertarian in their ass off right now. They are munching crayons. And then all this conflation, right? This is not about Palestine. This is not supposed to be, but there will be, right? There'll be people carrying every damn banner under the sun into this shit, but it's all an excuse to destabilize the daily peaceful operation that people expect out of society. So it's going to come. It's going to keep coming. And you really need to right now be on alert. And I'm not saying to be scared or whatever. I'm just saying pay attention to what's going on around you. You should have a scanner or a scanner app, and you should pay attention to it, especially when you get near any city center. If you're planning to travel across the country, you need to pay attention to make sure shit's not going on like blocking highways and something. Every damn one of you should be carrying a big-ass giant can of pepper spray in every vehicle that you own. Because I'm telling you right now, you block the highway on me, and I'm not shooting you because I don't want to go to prison, and I'm not dragging people while trucks drive over me. I'll just paint everybody's face, and I'll wait and let nature take its course, right? But you really need to be paying attention to what's going on around you. And if you work in an area like I described that these things blow up in, you need to start planning for not going to work at least once in a while, because once this shit starts, I don't care how peaceful it looks. You know, we talk about Bitcoin and bankruptcy and a bunch of other things. We use the concept of gradually then suddenly. There is no bigger gradually than suddenly than protests turning into riots. It goes very quick when it happens, and I'm going to tell you how it happens. The people behind it decide the point that they want to throw the gas on the pile and strike a match. Because the type of people that they attract with this activity are waiting for that signal. The minute they think, hey, I can go steal some shit and get away with it, it all starts. It takes one person throwing a brick through one window, grabbing one electronic device and running away with it, and not immediately being tackled and have the shit beat out of them by a cop and bit by Ren 10-10 and thrown in a box and taken off to jail. It takes one, and the whole thing goes to shit. The whole thing goes to shit. See, this is a special libertarian. Maybe I'm wrong, but I read ICE was the catalyst behind the violence. You read. Who'd you read that from? You know, where'd you get that little bit of information from? You're hopeless, dude. I'm not even going to talk to you today. Let's move on. Because I want to talk about the other side of this, which is the economics that the country's under right now. And don't think that it's a coincidence that we're causing another civil upheaval right at the time the country is on the precipice of bankruptcy, right? I don't want you to think that's a coincidence. This is Cloward-Priven strategy. And that's exactly what it is you keep bleeding the nation dry of its wealth, you sow discord, and then you use any catalyst that you can, any rallying cry that you can, to push a button and start a bunch of civil disobedience and riots and cause a bunch of problems at the time when the economic stress is highest. This has been the plan since the 60s, and you're watching it come to a head right now. Because what's going on right now is Jamie Dimon, who is one of the most powerful banking overlords in the world. And I don't have any love for Jamie Dimon, but respect is the right word. I do have an appreciation for what he knows. And because I know what he's about, I know when he speaks, when he's saying something true or not, I guess is the way to put it. And I would have respect for his knowledge, but not how he applies it. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon just issued a major warning on the state of the U.S. economy at an event organized by Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation. Dimon told regulators, so he's talking to like the SEC here, okay? The full effect of all the money printing since 2020 remains to be seen. Quote, you are going to see a crack in the bond market. It is going to happen. And I tell this to my regulators. Just think about that. I tell this to my regulators. Who are you, Billy the fucking kid, right? He doesn't mean like the ones that regulate him. He means the ones he owns, right? I tell this to my regulators through regulatory capture, by the way. Some of you are in this room. I'm telling you it's going to happen, and you are going to panic. I'm not going to panic. We'll be fine. We'll probably make more money, and then some of my friends will tell me, we like crises because it's good for J.P. Morgan Chase, but not really. Diamond says the bond vigilantes are back selling bonds to protest unstable fiscal policies and America's ballooning debt. In the long run, Diamond says he's not too worried about China as a potential adversary and instead believes the U.S. needs to self-improve and erase the enemy within. It's an odd day where I really agree with Diamond, right? If we are not the preeminent military and the preeminent economy in 40 years, we will not be the reserve currency. That's a fact. Just read history. We have to get our act together, and we have to do it very quickly. Here's the thing, and Jamie knows this. We are not going to get our act together quickly. We are not going to get our act together ever in time to stop what's coming. This is in the vein of what I said I wanted to talk about. Nothing stops this train. Now, some of you are Bitcoiners and big time so, and you pay attention to all the news, and you've probably watched all the really great presentations from the Bitcoin conference in Vegas. And you saw Lynn Alden's presentation, but it was on nothing stops this train. And I think a lot of people that kind of like know about Bitcoin and maybe even have some Bitcoin and kind of like it and pay attention a little bit to it. They know who Michael Saylor is and who Natalie Burnell and Lynn Alden and, you know, all these people are. And, you know, they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Maybe they even listen to some Guy Swan podcasts or something. And they're like, yeah, nothing stops this train. And you think what that means is Bitcoin is so powerful it can't be stopped. And I understand why you would think that. And honestly, until I listened and read the work that Lynn does, the first time I heard it, probably 7 years ago, I thought the same thing. Bitcoin, nothing stops this train. I mean, it even sounds like good marketing. It ain't got a damn thing to do with Bitcoin except as a causational response. That's what Bitcoin is, a causational response to nothing stopping this train. When Lynn says nothing stops this train, what's really being said is that this debt train cannot be stopped. There's no slowing down. There's no reversing course. There's no backing up. And let me be completely clear about it. It has nothing to do with whether or not your government and the people in power have the will to try to stop the train. Okay? There is a point where you have done so much damage to any entity, right? And the Federal Reserve and the U.S. economy is an entity. It's not biological, but it in some ways acts like it's biological, but it's an entity. You can only damage certain things so much to where they no longer can be fixed. So if you're a person that, like, you think, yeah, I could probably help someone that wants to live a healthier lifestyle. You know how to eat well. You know how to work out. You understand fitness. You understand mental fitness as well. You're the kind of person that maybe even you're not, you know, a trainer or a life coach or something, but you could do it if you had to. And I said, I'm going to send somebody to you, and, you know, they've got some health issues, and they're overweight and use too much substances, and do you think you could help them? You said, I'm not a professional, but, I mean, if they're willing, I can probably give them some pretty good advice, and if they'll follow it, you know, they'll probably get better. And if I told you, okay, the person is 84 years old, they're on a list for a liver transplant, but they have to survive 2 years to be on it long enough because they drunk themselves into that level. And they have four different kinds of cancer, and they've smoked two packs of cigarettes with no filters on them for the last 70 years of their life. Their diet is absolute dog shit. It's been that way forever. They're in full-blown metabolic syndrome. They've lost both of their feet already. They have type 2 diabetes and an A1C of 14.1. You know what you'd say if you had any brains? I ain't Jesus. Like, this person, I'm sorry, but they're like, I don't know how they made it to 84. There's nothing we can do here. Like, they might as well just go ahead and keep doing it for all I care because it ain't going to matter now. That's the economy, stupid. At least that's the economic system, right? And that's something we need to realize. The economic system and the economy ain't necessarily the same thing. Yeah, here's your next one for today. The M2 money supply hits a record high of $21.86 trillion. And this is a Bitcoin article. Will Bitcoin follow the surge? And there is a correlation between jumps in the M2, which is the primary measure of the monetary supply, and then Bitcoin gaining value. When they print more money and devalue money, then it takes more money to buy a hard asset like Bitcoin, amid other things in the cycle. But I think the interesting thing about this, right, the interesting thing about this is that the M2 money supply, which is pretty much all the money except for some completely tied up money, amounts to about $22 trillion, and we have $36 trillion debt. Now, it's not all the money in the world. This is U.S. dollars. There are $22 trillion in existence. That's a problem in of itself because all money is debt. But we owe $34, $35, $36 trillion. Pick the delta you want. There's $12 trillion more debt than there are dollars. Let me say it again. There's $12 trillion more debt than there are dollars. Do you really think if we stop paying for transgendered surgeries and operas and shit like that through USAID, it's going to make a dent in that? Do you think it's going to make a dent in that? I was about to tell a really off-color joke about dents, and it involved dwarfs and a fairy tale, but I'm not going to do it. You can figure it out for yourself, right? But that was a bigger dent than that would be. Like, they're just, no, that doesn't do nothing. Well, Jack, why were you for it? Because I don't want to do that. That's why. I'm all for cutting those programs so that we stop furthering that agenda. But it's not going to fix the economy. It's not going to fix the economic system. We are paying more than $1 trillion in interest on the debt, which I told you we would be 10 years ago. And a lot of you told me I didn't know what I was talking about. A real conservative was going to come and fix it. Yeah, how'd that work out for you? Hell, I've been telling you this for 17 years. I've been doing this. 17 years. I see the question about Planner. I'll go ahead and do that one right now, even though I usually star them. So Potent Ponic says, when are you going to do an episode about Planner, a.k.a. Trump's deep state spy AI? Okay. This is one of those things where people need to start fucking thinking, okay? You need to think a little bit more and react a little bit less because you saw a headline that somebody showed you. And you think that means the headline is accurate. Planner is a technology company. Who's it connected to? J.D. Vance, like only one level off. Peter Thiel, and J.D. is like his protege. That's how a guy that came from where he did got to be the vice president before he's 40 years old. Okay? Planner is not being tasked with developing AI to surveil you and gather information on you. That's not what this is. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's not what it is. But of course, that's how all of the places are reporting it. But if you read more than the headline by anything except the like total crazy alt rags and stuff that just want to hate Trump and hate government, if you actually read what they're doing, the task was to take all these existing government organizations that already have all this information on you and create a way that they can all share across the databases instead of having it walled off between governmental departments. Do I like it? No. Am I worried about it? No. You know why? They already have all the information on you you're worried about, right? The person that's asking this question, I'm not picking on him. I know Steven. He's a nice guy. But the reality is, all right, the reality of this is the people that do this, oh, my God, Planner. You know what they're doing? They're walking around with a freaking iPhone or a Google Android. They're not using a VPN. You're literally sending data every day, and then you're like, oh, my God, look what they're doing. It is not a serious concern. It's not a serious. What data do you think they're going to get on you, Stephen, that they don't already have? Right? That's the same thing with the real ID shit. Oh, my God, real ID. They're going to track us. They're going to track us. They're already tracking you, and the real ID doesn't track you. It's an ID where they verified your identification a second time by you showing them your birth certificate, which you had to do when you got your driver's license the first time anyway. And they put a little gold star on it. And then when you go to the airport, they go, yeah, this is a real ID, and they let you on a fucking plane. Well, they'll put me in a database that you're already in. I got a passport, so I don't have to get a real ID. A passport is a real ID that actually requires more databasing than a real ID does, right? All you'll do by not getting a real ID is hurt yourself. Well, one day, they're going to use real ID to keep people from doing fill in the blank, which means if you don't have one, you absolutely won't be able to do it. Yeah, you showed everybody. This is all about misdirection, this type of shit. Here I am explaining to you, while the United States economy is about to go into a tailspin from a standpoint of the value of the dollar like you've never seen before, literally ripping everything asunder, and I'm explaining to you how they're using a strategy that's been in place since the 1960s to create discord and tearing down and burning of cities across the country, and you're worried about your government getting data on you that they already have. It ain't that I don't care. It's that there's a whole bunch of shit that I care more about. Because you know what you can do about all this? Nothing, unless you pull everything into your own silo of your own life. Like, this is not a candidate what to protest. See, this is where it goes off the rails, Stephen. I can't even bother with you. Canada did it to protesters. Canada did what to protesters? How do you think government having information on you they already have on you is going to help them do what they did to the trucker protesters? They're going to do it to you anyway. This is this fantasy that people live in. You act, all of you people that do what Stephen's doing right now, you act like you're already in this unknown little envelope, right? And no one knows where you are, what your Social Security number is, how much money you made, right? Who your associates are, what freaking cell plan you have, how many emails you, they know all that shit already, but they'll know more. What more? Don't you understand? The problem is there's a dossier on every person in this country in a central database already. Whenever they talk about this shit, it's just to get you worried about some shit that you can't do anything about, so you won't focus on what actually you can do something about. So let's get back to it, right? M2 money supply exploding. More debt than there is money, and not by a little bit. Not by like a measly little $1 trillion or something. No, $12 trillion more debt than money. You have everything coming into a confluence, and then you got people running around and screaming that we need to get a real bill and fix the problem. Like, I love Thomas Massey, and I love Rand Paul. And I think they really believe in what they're doing. But if you sat them down and asked you to explain mathematically how you would fix this problem, they would concede, if you gave me complete authority, I can't do it. It can't be done. The whole thing is going to break. It's going to shatter. It has to. It has to. There's no way around this. And this isn't new, right? I'm not saying anything that I've never told you before. Not a damn thing that I haven't told you before. I told you this years ago. More than a decade ago, I said, if you elected an entire Congress of Ron Pauls, and you made Ron Paul the president, and you gave 60 Senate seats to Ron Paul types, you still can't fix it. That was 10 years ago. That's pre-COVID. So if we couldn't fix it then, what makes you think we can fix it now? I mean, I'd love anybody to come on and explain that to me. If we couldn't fix it 10 years ago, because the economic black hole had already grown so massive and was swallowing so much, and it's grown for another 10 years, and it's tripled in size, and it's tripled in its ability to gravitationally pull in destruction, and at the same time it's going on, it was an orchestrated plan, and there are people that are using the opportunity now to destroy what's left of this country, but you're going to fix it. So I tell you, Stephen, if you're still listening, I didn't piss you off there. To what end? If I tell people about Planter, to what end? What are they going to do? You're going to go write your congressman? You're going to go write your senator? Vote them out? Vote harder? No, you ain't going to do shit. You ain't going to do anything. And as much as I hate it, this is a reality. Under our Constitution, the United States federal government has the power, authority to have departments within government share information. There's not a legal leg to stand on to prevent, let's say, the NSA from sharing information with the FBI. None. None. Zero. Right? He says, we're fine. We can disagree on things and still be cool. But I want to know from you, Stephen, what good would it do? See, and that's the thing. When you get people, they want to chase everything that's bad, but you ask them what good would it do, they don't really know. We have to stop it. Stop what? Stop what? The collection of data? And I'll bet you, Stephen, are you on a VPN right now? I can't. I need to learn not to pay attention to these comments very much. Planner will turn out like the Patriot Act. Patriot Act was a fucking law passed by Congress where they made you scared, and I'm not talking about you individually, but as the people, made the people scared and used that to pass a giant bill that was thousands of pages long that enabled a lot of this collection. Planner is a company that builds technological systems that's been tasked with allowing Organization A to share information with Organization B, most of which is duplicate anyway. Okay? That's what it is. He says he's on a VPN. For some reason, I just don't believe you. But maybe you are. Who knows? Right. I just know that most of the people talking all this shit, that you're not using good privacy protocols, which you control, and you're worried about things that you don't. Right? All right. But let's move on, because I want to talk about what does that mean we should do? Well, one, if you're in a big city, get out, get out, get out. I've said it enough. I've been saying it for 17 years. I can't keep saying it. And I don't mean you have to get completely away, just all the way away from wherever you live. I don't mean that. I live about 25 miles from Dallas, maybe 30. I ain't worried at all where I'm at. But if I lived like in North Dallas or something, I'd be really worried right now. And I'm not saying this will be the one where the dream comes true for the people behind this, but it could be, and that could happen any day. I mean, 2 weeks ago, there were no riots anywhere except for college campuses throwing tantrums, and it really didn't affect anybody, you know. But today, it's a little bit different, isn't it? Now, all of a sudden, like, this has become real for people. So what do we do? I think we should be focusing on the opportunities we have in the next 10 years to build something for ourselves, especially for individuals, solo entrepreneurs, small companies, etc. That's all you can really do, is build as much wealth and as much of financial asset as you can. And I am putting Steven in a timeout because he's becoming a distraction at this point. You could speak again in 5 minutes. I'm not punishing you. I need to learn how to turn on in the YouTube settings flow control. I don't need people making a comment every 5 seconds. And I've been on live streams where I've seen that put in place. I'm going to put that in place for everybody soon. But we need to focus on what we can do. And again, we need to be building assets and knowledge into our life. And one of the biggest opportunities we have right now is learning to use and leverage AI tools. Right. And this is where the people that are all worried about planning, they're going to gain information on you. Use an anonymous login and then a freaking VPN if you're that worried about it. Again, they already know everything about you, and you ain't as important as you think you are. AI is the future. It's not a little bit the future. It's the future. It is the future. Ignoring AI today would have been like ignoring word processing programs in 1992, right? And ignoring things like Excel spreadsheets in 1992. And if you think about just about everybody in the world, some way your life is affected by like Word or its equivalent, Excel or its equivalent, et cetera, right? It's probably part of what you do. And the people that know how to leverage technology tend to do better than the people that don't. This technology is going to be integrated into every single thing that you touch that's technological, and even things that you don't think are. You can't run a search on Google right now without Gemini telling you what to think about it. And one of the important things in this is to maintain the ability to understand when you are being manipulated by a machine, and only by understanding the machine can you understand its manipulation. But right now, and in the people in the course saw this yesterday, I dropped all the work I did with ChatGPT as a PDF, long chat, into the AI course group. And it showed how I got ready for the show, how I came up with the topic, how I came up with the ideas for the bullet points, how I expanded them, how I then used GPT to compose the intro, the promotional blurb, the tweet, the email blurb, and develop the marketing messaging to go along with it, along with the artwork for the show. I would say that the show was 80% created by me, 20% by AI, but leveraging AI with my 80% input allowed me to complete in 15 minutes what it used to take me 2 hours to complete. I want you to really think about that. It took me 2 hours after I got good at it. I've been doing this for 17 years. And it takes me about 2 hours to do everything I just said on my own. If I can get better results in 15 minutes than I can get in 2 hours, and I don't do that, then you know what I'm going to say about me. I hate money. If you do that, you hate money. Now, is this stuff going to get overused? Yes. I mean, right now we have people using AI to compose emails that end up being long, detailed emails. And then the person receiving it, their boss, uses AI to make a short version of the email and compose an email back telling the person what to do. And we basically have two AI bots talking to each other about bullshit with two people pretending to do work in the middle. All right. I get that. But it doesn't mean that you can't do a hell of a lot with it. The ability to edit, to think, to come up with concepts that you wouldn't have. It's not how to do X. It's I'm trying to do X. Here's three ideas for how I can get X done. Give me 20 more. It will literally give you 20 more. And you might go, bullshit, dumb, stupid, no way, don't want it. Oh, whoa. You know, Michael Saylor has done with AI. And I believe based on the verbiage he's using Gemini. He's created two new public offerings that are going to make him the richest man in the world. I'll go out and say it right now. Michael Saylor, within 10 years, will be worth more money than Elon Musk, unless Elon gets on that train as well. I won't even say what it's about. You know it's about Bitcoin. But what he said is, I was able to come up with the framework for this in a day. If I'd given it to a team of lawyers and advisors and accountants, in a year they would have come back with less. I was able to get these things 95% to where they needed to be and then hand them off to that team with an edict. Finish it. Not tell me why you can't do it. I did that much, I might finish it. He was able to do in a couple of days what a team couldn't do in a year. You want to turn your back on that. There ain't a bone in my body that's not so old that it still has the energy to resist your resistance. I don't care. You do what you want. But if you're not leveraging AI right now, then you hate money. Now, again, I always say this. If you're like 80 years old, in good health, you're going to make at least 90. You got all the money you could ever want, and you don't give a shit because you ain't going to work no more anyway. That's fine. You still might enjoy some things that you could do with it for yourself, but I get it. If you're 50 and that still fits you, like, I got all the money I want, Jack. I'm good. As long as it's not all sitting in dollars, okay, yeah, whatever. You know, like, I'm not going to run out. I'm good. I don't work anymore. But if you are actively building in your life right now and you're not using AI, including shit on your homestead, just have the conversation. How can I? What can I do? Here's my idea. What do you think of it? It will be wrong, but you can either spend your time arguing with AI and looking for where it's wrong, or you can just accept that it's wrong, move beyond it, correct it, steer it, learn to use it, and come up with ideas and concepts you would have never come up with. I consider myself a pretty sharp guy. If you want to see how I present and how little material I need to present, go look at today's show notes when they're published with the audio side. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 bullet points. Most of them are a phrase, not even a sentence. And I'm able to present like this, just like I've been doing for 17 years. But I still sometimes I'm like, man, here's like 10 things and I don't know. And I'll throw it into AI and say, hey, I'm looking for some other angles on this. And they're going to be like, boom, bam, boom, 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 boom. And I look through it and go, no, that's redundant. Okay, that's valid, but I probably would have come up with it anyway. And this next two are actually that one described differently. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow. And that'll open up a whole plethora of things that I can talk about, present on, or develop material on. And not only knowing how to use it for yourself, but knowing how to use it to benefit others will be a great idea. I mean, anybody can figure out how to make a website today, really. Anybody can. But most people that have a website, if you ask them where they got it, unless they're solopreneurs, they say, well, so-and-so built it for me. Is it because they couldn't have built it? No, it's like I got other shit to do with my time. And that doesn't interest me. It's not my passion. It's not my core task, right? It's not my core mission. So since that's a commodity thing I can pay somebody to do for me, I'll pay somebody to do it for me. My stupid lawn tractor blew the freaking drive belt off the mower deck again. Again. We got a guy coming. I'm going to pay him $75 to fix it. I could fix it in about an hour and a half. It's a pain in the ass job to do, but it's not hard. It's just a pain in the ass. Frankly, I make more than $75 an hour working. I'm not trading the time I have off to make less money than I have with the time that I'm on. I'm not doing it. It's just a convenience issue. And anybody that says that they don't do the same thing is either dead broke and doesn't have any money to do it with, so they have to do it themselves, or they're lying. You change your own oil? No, shut up. Shut up. Don't tell me you do all the things for yourself and you don't even change. Changing oil's easy, right? Changing oil's easy. Very few people still change their own oil. And honestly, with as quick as they do it now and as cheap as it really is, because you're mostly paying for the filter and the oil, because they're so fast, it doesn't make sense to change your oil. What are you going to do with all the waste oil? I mean, if you're somebody that turns it into something, I get it. There's those people that they do everything down the line. But most people, you have something in your life you're just not going to do. Do you ever buy food that's already cooked? Then shut up. Of course you'll pay somebody if somebody will pay you. Because there's a huge future in building things with AI and developing systems with AI for other people. Right, moving on from AI. Developing the ability to teach others skills to develop digital products, the creator economy, all of those things I'm putting in one bullet point. I am a perfect example of how you can build a strong income with a creator economy. You can even say things that piss and hack people off, and they'll still come back. Some of them will leave. It doesn't matter. Other ones will show up. The one thing you have to be is a creator to be successful long term. I know there's people way bigger than me right now. They've only been around for a year. Will they be here in 17 years? Most of them will not. The people with staying power are authentic. They may piss you off, but if somebody told you they said what pissed you off, you'd be like, that sounds like him. That sounds like her. That's who they would be. When I look at people that have been around as long as me, you know, I'm looking at people like Adam Curry. I'm looking at people like Gary Vaynerchuk, right? I'm looking at people that always piss somebody off, but they always say things the same way. The only time they change what they're saying is because they learned something new or something new showed up. So, yes, I used to say that, but back then we didn't have X. Now we have X. That changes the calculus. But the morality, the ethics, the concepts, et cetera, the person remains the same. But it's not just like the creator economy. It's also things like digital products. And again, that hooks back into AI. You can build entire new classes and types of digital product, web-enabled applications, et cetera. You can even code with some of the stuff if you don't know how to code. If you know what you want the thing to do at the other end, you can make it happen, okay? And then critical skills. There's a lot of desire right now to learn critical skills that people didn't learn. You know what ChatGPT can do? It gives you a lot of great ideas for how to cook. It even gives you some okay recipes. It can't really teach you to cook. Teaching someone to cook is visual. Do you know how many people can't cook? Shitloads of them. And I don't mean not cook good. I mean, they can barely can microwave a zoodle noodle cup of, you know, ramen noodles. They can barely pull off making ramen noodles. They don't know anything. They don't know how to work a knife. That's why cooking channels on YouTube are huge. There's 100 things like that. Some people actually do not want to know how to work on their own car. It used to be like any guy my age, I want to believe that, maybe 10 years older though, definitely, almost every male in this country at some point changed the oil with their dad. You know, changed out spark plugs, gapped them, changed the points on the distributor that doesn't even exist anymore. Changed tires, rotated them, put on a new fan belt, new hose. Like they did all, we did all that shit like a shade tree mechanics with our dads in the backyard because everybody used to work on vehicles because we didn't need a computer to do it back then, and they knew how to do that, right? Humble Mechanic says no learn to change oil, no drive car. But the thing is, Humble, right? Soon they won't even you don't even drive the car. The car's going to drive you. It's not that far away. It's closer than we think, right? Dirty Dan says he learned to replace the headlight fluid. Yeah, I know that joke too. But what about the chair fluid? The seat fluid? If you have heated seats, there's fluid in it. I'm kidding. But no, like there is an incredible opportunity for online education right now. There's such a hunger to learn. We have this entire, really two generations. I'd say the younger 50% of millennials and Gen Z, by and large, that cohort. So Gen Z all the way up to mid-millennial. I'm not picking on any individual that's in that cohort because some of you guys are awesome. But as a cohort, they don't know how to do anything. They don't know how to do anything. They know how to work a tablet or whatever, but they don't know how to do things. They don't know how to cook, you know. And again, there's exceptions. My grandson's an exception. My grandson will cook you a ribeye that any chef would be happy to put on their menu in a restaurant. But that's not typical, is it? And as these people begin to mature, the ones that do any, and that's millions, emotionally, and they realize, I never learned how to do these things, they start going out and using their internet natives. They grew up never not knowing a world without the internet in it. So they go there and they look for, how do I? And they start asking the right questions. And they find people that they affiliate with, that they bond with. Even if you don't know them, they bond with you. And when you put out information that empowers and educates and enables them, they'll pay you for it. There's tremendous opportunity in that whole space. Again, teaching critical skills, building digital products, the whole creator economy, and all of those types of products are much easier to sell if you're part of the creator economy. Because you have a marketing platform in whatever it is that you create, whether it's 90-second TikTok videos or two-hour podcasts, doesn't matter. And I think AI will find its limits there, right? They have AI girlfriends now and all kinds of shit, and like, even if that gets the simps initially, it won't hold them. In the end, we want connection to other people, real people, not computer algorithms. How about buying and holding Bitcoin long term? You knew I was going to say it, but it is the number one thing you can do for yourself right now. You can be building wealth right now if you work at fucking McDonald's. I'm serious. There's still a lot of time to front run what's coming here. There's still a lot of people in denial. I have this discussion all the time on social media where there's a certain, like, I'd say like half the Bitcoin influencers are all on board with, we have to spend Bitcoin to make it successful. And my response is always, first of all, we do not have a deficiency in spending in this country. We don't. We have no deficiency in spending at all. We have a deficiency in saving. So I don't care how you're saving your wealth, you should be saving more of your wealth than you probably are. So that's already out the window with me. But there is this tendency to use the fallacy of special pleading, right? And the authority fallacy. But what Satoshi wanted, a market determines the utility of an asset at any given time. Okay. And for the time being, and I'm not saying forever, but for the significant future, especially for a society that thinks in terms of microwave ovens, when you say 10 years, that's an eternity to people today. For the foreseeable future, the utility of Bitcoin is primarily, first and foremost, a store of value. And when you have this cataclysm coming, when you have the people that regulate the bond markets, in the words of Jamie Dimon, about to go into panic mode, and the only solution they have is when the bonds start getting dumped, the Fed buys the bonds. We call that quantitative easing. That's the only, there is no other solution. Well, what does the Fed do when it doesn't have money to buy the bond? It issues another bond that it uses to generate cash by issuing debt, and then it prints money to buy the bond with. That's the only solution. So eventually, when you realize that all of these instruments are denominated in dollars and you want security, there's only one lifeboat to run to, and it ain't fucking Ethereum. And it ain't gold, because gold is a dumb rock that doesn't move. When you have an idiot like Peter Schiff saying, I don't understand Bitcoin, it doesn't even produce a yield, neither does gold. Now, gold can be made to produce a yield, same way Bitcoin can. I'll get into that today. But you should be storing your surplus capital, any money that you know you're not going to conceivably touch for 5 years or more, should be held in Bitcoin. Not spent, held in Bitcoin. But Jack, you're a hypocrite. You accept Bitcoin. It's the best money in the world. Of course I accept it. I'm still telling you not to spend it. And I'm saying if you want to spend Bitcoin with me, this is what I would prefer that you do. Open up an account with a service like Strike, put dollars in it, send dollars to me, and that will get to me in the form of Bitcoin so you don't create a tax consequence for yourself. See how simple that is? And I tell people all the time, but what about the company that only wants Bitcoin? First of all, they're stupid and they're going to go bankrupt. I'm sorry, but they are. And second, they do not exist. And third, 99% of companies in the world today don't accept it at all. So I'm not real worried about that. But if I wanted something and the counterparty insisted on Bitcoin, that's what I'm going to do. Give me an address. You'll get Bitcoin. They don't even need to know that I'm spending dollars because it's not going to create tax consequences for me. And this idea that we're going to have hyper-Bitcoinization at some point and it'll take over and people will routinely spend it on layer two and layer three settlement layers is probably accurate. And when that happens, if that happens, while I'm still young enough to care, right, still have my faculties and I'm not dead, ain't cashed my chips in yet, I want as many sats in my possession as possible when I get there. And I've never heard anybody object to that with logic, reason, and facts, and math, and economics. Only emotion and special pleading and fallacy. Because there is no logical economic argument for it. Because Bitcoin needs us to spend it. It's not a factual statement. It doesn't need Bitcoin doesn't need anything. It's a protocol. Bitcoin no more needs something from me than TCP/IP needs from me. They're both protocols. What I need is to make sure that I build my wealth in the smartest, most intelligent way possible and create as little problem in my life as I can because I have a lot of shit to do and problems prevent you from doing important shit. So trying to figure out how to properly report on your taxes 4,000 Bitcoin transactions in and out this year, dumb. Don't do that. Buy the Bitcoin, save it. However you do it. I prefer self-custody, but if you have an account and you're holding a brokerage account and you're holding ETFs in it, what I do is better, not because I'm smarter, just because it is. I'm not going to do it today, but I can logically make that case. But for some people, for me, it's better. For some people, it might be better that they have an ETF because without the ETF, they wouldn't have any Bitcoin exposure at all. Or the money they have to buy Bitcoin with is in a format where they can't get to Bitcoin without the ETFs. And there's a dozen other examples I could give where you're into it that way. Yeah. But stack Bitcoin. And this is not a once in a lifetime opportunity to preserve your wealth with Bitcoin. It is for you in that you're not going to get another opportunity like this. So it's once in your lifetime. This is a once in a freaking millennia opportunity. Society does not frequently go through complete economic sea changes, right? Like, well, you know, we had the Federal Reserve Act and then 1971. No, but what we had was gold is money, 1,000 years, and then it took about 150 years to fully demonetize gold. You're watching that happen again, but because of the speed of technology, and the critical nature of the crisis and technology and age enabling the crisis to be far worse than it's ever been in history, that will move much faster. It won't take 150 years. But it'll probably take another decade. If that's not fast enough for you, I'm sorry. I don't set the timeline. I just foretell the timeline. All right. Now, the next one, local service businesses. I'm telling you right now, there's so many people that think the way I do that have money. Right. And I don't have Michael Saylor money at all. I'm not a billionaire. I'm not even like a high level millionaire or nothing like that. Right. I don't have that kind of. I'm talking about blue collar millionaire types. I'm talking about people that, you know, just have well, good paying jobs making 150, 200,000 a year. There's lots of us that live out in the suburbs and out in rural America and telecommuter or whatever. And they just there's certain things they just don't want to do. Right. The guy coming to do the lawnmower, I found him on next door. He has a handyman services business. Once he's done with that, if he does a good job, I have a whole bunch of shit to talk to him about because my handyman is good, but not reliable. Like he says, I'll be here Monday and he's really not going to be here until like 3 Mondays later after that Monday. So if I got a guy that will show up quick when I need something done quick, I'll give him more work. I just had a bunch of trees cut down on my property. Dude made about $1,000 in 4 days. It's not Superman money, but it ain't bad, and I paid him cash, and I bet you, just knowing the kind of guy he is, that that is between me and him and the fence post over there in the East Pasture. All right? Like, there is so much opportunity like that, and those businesses can be scaled with day labor, contract workers, et cetera, where and as you need them, and they can also be scaled by, hey, I was wondering while you're here, do you do this thing over there? No. And then you make a decision. Well, I can. Or let me get you somebody that can. And if you're that person that's going to cost, you're basically a salesperson for yourself when you're a handyman or any kind of service business. If you're a small company and you run it and you own it, you are the primary, I don't care if you hire a salesperson, you're still the primary salesperson. You're going to be on properties all the time. You're going to be talking to customers all the time, and you're going to be selling what you do. That means you're already in. And that means when somebody says, do you remodel bathrooms, and you don't because you don't want to be in that business, they're too complex, or whatever reason it is, you don't want to do it. You don't do that. You should find, straight out of the gate, before anybody even asks, the best, affordable, reliable bathroom company where you live, and you should go to them in advance and say, I want to refer you business, but I am not Mother Teresa, and I ain't your mama, and I ain't doing it because I like you, and I ain't doing it just because it makes my customers happy. I want money. Give me a number, a percentage of the job that you will bid and you will sign off on and you will choose to take, that I will be paid for all the business I flip to you. And if it's a fair number and you do a good job the first time and you keep doing a good job, I will never refer to anybody else that does bathrooms. And you should have one of those if you don't do siding for siding. And you should have one of those for roofing if you don't do roofing. And what I'm using handyman here. But no matter what space you're in, that will apply. If you do like you're the kind of person that goes in and fix network issues for small companies, but you don't build websites, you should have a web development company that you know that you can flip business to. And anything that I can't tell you all the things. ChatGPT might give you some ideas, just saying, or any AI tool might give you some ideas. But just talk to your customers as you build your business and find out the things that they need that they have a hard time finding or trusting a supplier for. Then, do the same thing I do for you guys, right? Somebody will write me, do you have a product that does XYZ you can recommend? And I'll think, I really don't. And a lot of times it's something I own, but like the thing that I own, it was so reliable that I bought it 20 years ago and it still works and I don't make it anymore. And then what do I do? I start researching it and I go find the best damn thing for that niche that I can find. And I bring it out with a product review. I usually buy one. If it's not, thousands of dollars, $50, $10, even $100. If it makes sense that I have a good product to recommend, I'll go buy it, put it through its paces and say, yeah, this is what I recommend now. Just do that for your customers, whatever you're building. And then anything you don't want to add as a direct service, take a 5% riff as a sales consultant for other people and build a massive network. This whole concept of service-based, locally-based businesses is just a great way to go. And then locally produced food and other sustainable products. I believe there's a huge market, and it will only grow. The more we end up with corporate shill shit, the more hunger there will be. Like, I can't tell you how many people would buy grass-fed beef if they actually could buy grass-fed beef, like, that was local to them, instead of the bullshit that's from Australia or Brazil in the cooler at the grocery store that costs twice as much and ain't worth it. You should pay less for grass-fed local beef than you pay for CAFO beef at the grocery store. I know that seems counterintuitive, but let's look at the difference. Local grass-fed beef went from the producer to the slaughterhouse to your freezer. How's all the rest of it get there? How many steps are in that distribution system? Most of the beef that you eat, if it's U.S. beef, let's say it was raised somewhere around here in Dallas, it probably went out to look. If it ended up in a grocery store, right? Because there is some local producers here that have like local smaller CAFOs, and they finish their cattle on grain at those, and they're much less abusive to animals than the other thing I'm going to talk about in a second. That does exist. I know one guy that does it not far from here, and I really don't have much of a problem. He's only got them on that grain for about 30 days to put that final marbling into the fat on them. And it's just what how he chooses to market. I don't want to buy that product if I'm buying local. I want to buy grass fed local, but you know, that's what he does. And so that happens. But when you look at most local producers that are grass fed, they never buy any food for that animal. They just graze it. They have a very good profit selling at a very reasonable price, and then you have it processed and do what you're going to do with it. When you look at what you find on the cooler of Publix or Albertsons or Kroger's or whatever, if it is U.S. produced again and you're buying it here, let's say Dallas-Fort Worth, and it was raised anywhere near Dallas-Fort Worth, it probably went on a truck out to Lubbock and went through that hell out there in one of those massive CAFOs. I mean, there's CAFOs out there. When you drive by them, you cannot see the end of the cows. They go to the horizon, and they're standing in their shit. But there's – I'm not even getting into ethics here, right? There's a cost associated with doing that. Then that animal is fattened. It's slaughtered. It's parted out, and it's shipped all the way back. Of course it's expensive compared to something locally produced and delivered. But – you know, there's a market there. Well, I don't have room to raise cattle or even sheep, Jack, and I don't know that I want to do it. I don't want to do it. But if I wanted a business in it, I'd go find all the local producers and be like, what if all you did was raid cattle? What if you didn't have to worry about setting appointments with slaughterhouse? What if you didn't have to worry about finding any customers? What if I just brought you customers? And then, well, how would I pay you? Well, you don't have to. I'll put my own markup on it. I'll just bring you orders. Every damn one of them will say, yeah, all right, boy, let's see you do it. That's just one example. And I've talked about this before. All these people, I'm going to grow this, and I'm going to grow that, and I'm going to grow this, and I'm going to grow that. Not everybody, most people, that is a freaking toolbox fantasy. One day I'll have a business, and here's a whole list of things I have to do first so I don't get on with building the business, because that's the hard part. Where that person can focus on maybe doing one or two products, develop an entire catalog of products that others produce, and develop some sort of like home delivery co-op. I mean, we used to sell eggs to something until before we downsized. We used to do just that. We had a couple. That's exactly what they did. That's all they did. They worked about 25 hours a week, and they had all the money they needed. They weren't rich, but they were making more money than most couples with two full-time jobs. And that's all they did. There are so many opportunities in that space. Sustainable products, food, regenerative agriculture. We talked about mushrooms yesterday. There is a hunger, literal hunger, to eat better. And there's a lot of people that want government to fix it for them, and government's not going to fix it for them. And then there's grown-ups that realize, okay, eating better was always allowed. I'm just going to do that, and they want to buy from you or something like that. The only question here is, what are you going to do for you and your family? I want to reiterate, you cannot, you will not, you will never change it, because you can't. Because nothing stops this train. The USS economic system, right, that ship is going down. Now, it doesn't mean there won't be a ship. You know, sometimes when a ship goes down, it's because you blow it up and scuttle it because you're building a new ship. Put a new name on it, but the new name is the same as the old name, right? Star Trek, you had the Enterprise A, B, C, D, E, right? Yeah. That's a thing. And I think that's what we're witnessing right now. The reason you had this explosion between Trump and Elon, let me hit on that a little bit before we wrap up today. First of all, you got two extremely strong personalities and true, incredibly wealthy people. And as wealthy as Trump is, you know, Elon is the wealthiest man in the world. And they both have very strong opinions, and they're coming from different places. You also have in Trump a guy that I believe if the Trump-Elon bromance had occurred in 2016, things might have worked out differently. Because Trump was a naive, dumb fuck when he came into government at the time. And I don't think Trump's a dumb man. But he was a dumb fuck when it came to government. He thought he could do things. He thought a president could just do things. And he learned there's a lot of shit you can't do when you're president. And so Trump's second term, right, with a 4-year break in between, involved a lot of reflection It involved a lot of understanding of the real den of vipers he had walked into. Right? He was a 16-year-old emperor that was just handed the empire in 2016. He grew up a little fucking bit. And that's why if you look at his staff, there's a lot of them I don't like, but they're effective people that are competent and good at their jobs. Right? He did a much better staff selection this time. Too many neocons, I'll grant that, but to get the things done. So when Trump comes at this big, beautiful bill, he comes at it from a standpoint of, here's 10 things I absolutely want to accomplish, and they're going to piss the money away anyway, so here's the shit I have to give them to get my things done. Elon is coming at this like Trump in 2016. Well, we should just do the right thing, which I agree with in principle, but in practice, it will not happen in D.C. And there's also a point where you look at the underlying economics I just went over and realize there's been no way to stop this train for over 20 years. I mean, it was bad in the 80s, but by the time we got to the mid-90s, we had gone over the event horizon economically. The only solution is a new system of economics. That's all that's left. So I think Trump's figured that out to some degree and is governing from that perspective. We might as well take the fiat money and do as much good with it as we can while it lasts, because we're coming to a point where there's going to be some sort of inversion, some monetary rebasement, which I've been talking about since 2008, rebasing the monetary system. If you just put rebasement in the search box on TSP, I guarantee you'll find shit from 2008. You might have to put rebase, variations thereof, but I guarantee you can find me talking about a monetary rebasement in 2008. You can go back and listen to my description, my two-part video thing that I did something like 15 years ago about downward class migration. It's all the same thing. This was always going to happen. So if you are in charge right now of this system, you know you're on a sinking ship. So what do you start doing? You start thinking about all the things you want to save, all the things you want to get on the life rafts, making your SOS calls, because the ship's going down. There's a point where, like, nothing we're going to do is going to save the ship, but, yeah, turn on the bilge pumps and we can keep it afloat longer so we can save what's left. This isn't the old analogy from Glenn Beck about slowing down the car headed to the cliff and turning the angle a little bit, right? Because that was just bullshit. This is reality. Like, this ship is going down. Because if you were driving, this is what's wrong with the car analogy. If you were driving the car, you have the option of hitting the brakes. You have the option of turning the wheel and going parallel to the cliff and driving away from it. If you're on a ship in the middle of the ocean and it's had enough hull breach, there is a point where thou shalt not stop the sinking ship, no matter what you do. You could have freaking the power of three X-Men and the ship's still going down. That's the dollar. That's the underlying economic system. It's the same inflection point we hit in 1971. What they did in 71, for all the shit Nixon gets for it, and I'm all for giving Nixon shit, right? At that point, they're really wanting another alternative. And people that think there was, you don't even know what would have happened. If they had maintained the gold standard in 1971, we would still be in the depression that it had created. Still. I can tell you, I've looked at enough numbers to tell you that's the case. The United States would have been completely have descended into an economic abyss, and someone else would have took over the global financial system, and we would have never recovered. Maybe that would have been a good thing long term. I don't know, but that's what would have happened. So when you take a politician, you put them into a place where you can turn on the bilge pumps to delay the ship sinking, or you can leave them off and let it sink faster. They'll turn the bilge pumps on every time. That's what all this spending is, the bilge pumps. It's trying to keep things afloat. And I believe it's moving us toward a system based on honestly, I think that Trump's mind, and I don't know if we'll get there because somebody else will be in charge as it all happens. And who knows what side of the aisle they'll be from, is actually a coexistence of gold and Bitcoin as underlying financial assets. But the problem is that we don't have enough gold to do it with. The United States doesn't have enough gold to do it with. We don't have enough gold to fund the government for a year. So how are you going to have a gold-backed dollar? Where you can get the gold from. And gold doesn't have the appreciation left in it to make that happen either. It's too old of an asset. So you have to go to something that moves at the speed of light, is sellable across space and time, and has a lot of appreciation left in it yet. Because in Michael Saylor's words, the first country that figures out print the money and buy Bitcoin with it and put the Bitcoin away as a strategic reserve wins. We'll see who does it first. But I believe that's what's coming. That's what's coming. And it's your mother says Vietnam bankrupted the U.S. economy. Yeah, but it really didn't. It was more like not the straw that broke the camel's back, but like the last handful of straw that broke the camel's back. If you look at the total expenditure on the Vietnam War, that expenditure alone is not enough to bankrupt the country. We spent money on a lot of other shit we didn't have money for. The biggest thing we did is we lied, which will always happen with a gold reserve system. We lied. We said we had more gold than we did. We issued dollars. We didn't lie directly, but we issued more dollars than there was gold to back the dollars. That's what actually bankrupted the system. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to spend dollars that we didn't have because we would never created them in the first place. See how that works? But yeah, Vietnam did not help. That's for sure. But it sure enriched a lot of people, didn't it? So what are you going to do? That's what I want to end with. What are you going to do? How are you going to navigate the future? Are you a semi-old fuck like me in your 50s? You know, we only have so much time left to capitalize on this if you're that old. You'll be 70 like that. You won't even realize how fast it'll happen if you're my age. I become more aware of that every day. If you're 30, you're going to be 50 like that. Let me tell you, young folks, 30-somethings, 30 to 50 goes a hell of a lot faster than 20 to 30. A hell of a lot faster because it's less of a percentage of your life as you age. You know, when you're 12 years old, summer vacation, 12 weeks, goes forever. You probably don't even remember much before you were 5. So when you're 10, you only have 5 years of reference point when you're off for summer vacation. It seems like forever. When you're 21 years old and you get summer break from college, it goes pretty quick. When you become a parent, watching your kid go from 5 to 10 goes like that. Make the most of your dash. Do something with it. Because you're not going to get a better opportunity than you have right now. You're not. There will never be a time in history again like right now where you can see the old monetary order crumbling and the new monetary order forming. And it's the longest telegraphed punch in history. And it's a repetitive historical cycle that you can literally look back and go, it happened here, it happened here, it happened here, and it happened here, and it happened here, and it happened here. And now here's the same pattern reproducing itself. And the instruments may have changed, the underlying assets may have changed, but how it works remains the same. 10 years from now, there will be a United States, there will be a United States government, and it will be bigger and have more power than it does right now. That's going to happen, and it won't be good for you. That's going to happen. You think you're going to stop it? Go ahead. God bless you. And if you do, I will salute you and make you the hero of the decade. I will make a plaque and I'll mail it to you, but it's probably not. I'm probably safe on that bet that I'm not going to have to do it, but you can be more economically stable, more self-sufficient, more self-reliant, have more personal liberty. You can make this. Your mother says in the new Roman Empire, that's exactly a good way to look at it. And you take people and say, if you'd been there when the Roman Empire was reconstructing, what would you? I would have gotten rich. No, you wouldn't have. Because it's a hell of a lot easier to do now than it was back then. Or what if you went back in time to 1960? I would have gotten rich. It's a hell of a lot easier to do now. You better get on with proving what you have to say. There's a tremendous opportunity right now. The things you're going to have to do, though, are you're going to have to think differently for a different time. And this is why, you know, you young folks that are crying, you 20-somethings, you early 30-somethings, and you're bitching, man, you should be so excited about the opportunity in front of you. I have 20 years until I'm old as fuck. You have 20 years until you're my age. you have the energy that comes with that youth. And all you have to do is stop crying, stop believing somebody did it to you, stop bitching about the boomers. For the love of God, let me defend the boomers one more time. The boomers is 72 million people, the majority of which have as little power and have always had as little power as you do right now. Your belief that, I don't know, somehow in 1970 when the average boomer was 12 years old, that they were in control of anything, or that was even the ones that were 20 in 1970 were in control of anything, is a complete fantasy that's been planted in your head by the same people that are trying to convince you that the LA riots are because ICE. And it just happened on its own, and that's really what it was, right? It's the same people convincing you. Class warfare is as old as time itself. There's even songs about it. Every generation blames the one before, right? That's an 80s song. Teach the children well, their parents' hell will slowly go by. That's a 60s song. We're saying the same thing. It's always been about blaming somebody else. The boomers you're bitching about, most of them grew up. You know, when I say grew up, I mean came into their own as young adults in the 70s and 80s. Most of them, their first house had somewhere between a 12 and 18% interest rate on it. They lived through a time when they had a minimum wage of $1.80 an hour, and no, gold didn't make it a lot of money. And no, they didn't live at a time when a guy could make $3 an hour and support a family of four. There's a false nostalgia in there that is ridiculous, and the only reason that I bring it up is because anybody that's thinking that way right now, you don't see what's sitting in front of you and your opportunity. The only reason you're blaming someone who's 78 years old right now living on Social Security, that you have more than most of you that are doing it, is because you don't want to face the reality of where you are right now, which is, I don't care who did what to you. I don't care how much of an actual victim you are. It doesn't matter. Everything is your responsibility. Most things are your fault. Some things aren't your fault. But 100% of the things that you have to deal with are your responsibility. No one's coming to do it for you. And if you want to be 25 to 30 years of age in any particular snapshot in history, this is the exact place you would want to be if you're thinking about 10 years from now instead of 10 minutes. Everything you do in your life from this point forward, you should ask yourself, this action that I'm going to take right now, what does it mean in 7 minutes? What does it mean in 7 hours? What does it mean in 7 days? What does it mean in 7 weeks? What does it mean in 7 years? What does it mean in 7 decades? And what does it mean in 7 generations? The 7x7 rule is what I call it. You should ask that question in everything that you do. And the person that's crying about the boomer says, no, boo, I got to take care of me now. Okay. I'm going to tell you that the boomers as a generation thought more about the generations we have as young people today, than the generations of young people today are thinking to the future about those generations. They were more forward-looking than you were. That's why they went out and got maced in the face protesting the Vietnam War and were actually doing something to change things for the better versus burning down somebody's little freaking Tokyo, sushi shop. Or smashing windows in and stealing shit out of an electronic store. That's not what the boomers did during the protests for the Vietnam War. They simply marched to end a war. Those are the people you're talking shit about. A lot of the freedoms that you had today, boomers were the catalyst for that change. But it doesn't matter. If they were the darkest, most Darth Vader shit that ever came, doesn't change the reality where you sit. So I challenge you. What will this mean in 7 minutes? Every dollar you spend, everything you do in your life that has consequence going forward, ask the question all the way through 7 generations, 7 minutes, 7 hours, 7 days, 7 weeks, 7 months, 7 years, 7 decades, 7 generations. Ask the question. You will get, with most things, you'll get to a point like, what will it mean in 7 days? It'll mean this. What will it mean in 7 weeks? It'll mean this. 7 years? Won't even matter. Okay. Ask a question anyway. Don't be afraid of the answers. See, here's why I think people resist that thinking. It's the same reason people resist Bitcoin. I think subconsciously people don't even really understand what they're doing when they resist these things. The minute you start asking those questions, the minute you start holding a true appreciating asset, that's not a get-rich-quick scheme, it's a long-term wealth scheme. It causes a sea change mentally. And when that happens, it requires you, almost against your will, to start imposing discipline on yourself. When you really do, like when you're me and you go upstairs and you pull out that beautiful pre-World War II Browning A5 Belgian made, and you look at it, this is a beautiful shotgun. This is worth about $2,500. When I got it, it was worth $1,500. Now, you think that's the appreciating asset? If you ain't heard the story, wait. It gets good for you and bad for me. Back in 2014, when Bitcoin was $600, I bought this gun that was worth over $1,000 for $600, one Bitcoin. Now I'm standing here today looking at a shotgun that effectively I paid $110,000 for. Boy, a little bit of that in your life, and you'll start saying, I don't think I'm going to sell this. I don't think I'm going to buy this other thing. Because every dollar I spend here, I could have used to invest there. In the words of George Clausen in The Richest Man in Babylon, I should have taken the money that came in and turned it into my slave and made slaves of its children and its grandchildren and its great-grandchildren so that they always work for me. But that discipline requires thinking past this day, this week, this month, and even this year. And that's something that we have been conditioned as a society not to do and to actually resent the people that do it. That's where it must be nice comes from, right? That's poison. Those words, it must be nice, are poison to your future wealth. The reason we say, oh, it must be nice, is because we don't want to do what that person did to get where they are. It's up to you. I ask you one more time today before we move on. What will you do for your future and your family's future starting right now, today? Let me take a couple questions and let's wrap up. Question. Jared says, as a BT Maxi with 10 to 20 year hold appetite, why hold through cyclic bear markets? Number one, because you can be wrong. You can be wrong. And I do believe we're at a place with less volatility going forward than we had in the past. But I think that there will still be some cyclical nature to the whole thing. Number two, it is very likely that unless you're holding Bitcoin in some sort of tax deferred status, that you'll end up losing enough money on capital gains that your value of being out of the market will be supplanted. And it's most likely that you will not go back in at the bottom. You'll still wait for more and you'll chase it. That's another reason you shouldn't do it. And number three, over time, it has been proven by just looking at the numbers behind it, that the people that simply stack and keep stacking end up ahead. You'll just do better long term. And again, if you have Bitcoin in like a Roth IRA or something, you have something like a Bitcoin ETF in a non-taxable account, and you know we've hit that blow off top for the cycle, and you trade out and let it come down before you go back in, I can't fault you if you get it right. But the reality is the explosive growth always comes in a very short, gradually, then suddenly period. And what you could do instead is just keep sweeping more and more excess capital in all the way up, all the way down, all the way up, all the way down. And that has just worked really well for people. I've gotten to a point now where I DCA every day, meaning I buy Bitcoin every day. And even if I decide like, oh, here's a windfall $1,000, I'm going to put in a Bitcoin. I'll put it in, you know, whatever exchange I'm using for that. And then I'll divide by the number of days and I'll buy it on a daily basis. I'm just telling you, if I had taken my advice, that I give now from the time I got involved with Bitcoin in the beginning, then I wouldn't be telling you that, a lot of people have more money than me. I'll leave it at that. Right? I don't want to say too much. Scott says, we are moving to a post-labor economy. The transition is going to be rough. No, we're not. Now, there's a lot of labor that will be supplanted by automation, robotics, and AI. But the need for humans isn't going anywhere. Now, maybe the need for the number of humans participating in the workforce today will decline. The per capita percentage, right? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that even though like people have this fantasy, the boomers never had the life you think that they did. But the silent did. The guys that fought World War II and the greatest generation prior to them, those two generations, most of the families in the country from the poor, middle class, upper middle class, affluent, and wealthy, all across the board were single income households. So we don't need to have everybody working for society to work. It is actually not a normal part of the human condition that everybody has a job, right? It's not the way societies have traditionally worked. And this isn't about women get back in the kitchen and make me a sandwich. It's not about that. It's just that, you know, just because you don't work doesn't mean you need to stay in the kitchen making babies and sandwiches. There's a lot of other productive things people can do. But in the end, as long as we have problems, we'll have jobs. The tools we use to accomplish those jobs may change. But you can look at every wave of technology. It was supposed to lead us into complete economic disaster from unemployment, and it never happened. So why would it happen now? What's different this time? You know, if you look back, if you go back to the 70s and back, even the 80s, every major company had a typing pool. There were millions of women, mostly employed all over the world, all over the country. You know, companies from the size of IBM and Microsoft at the time, even these companies that had computers, they still had typing pools. Crazy as it sounds now, because they were so early on in the development of the technology, right? And you know, if you go again, if you go really back into the 70s and further back, it was a number one way that women that wanted a job went out and knew they could get a job and be paid okay. And they sat all day and all they did was take documents that were produced by their higher ups and type copies and make triplicates with carbon paper and shit. And it went away. And more people work in office jobs now than ever before. One person can do way more work than the day of the typewriter, but more people are working doing the same work. I just covered it last week, right? IBM brings in AI-driven software to handle HR functions, lays off 8,000 employees, within 6 months rehires 8,000 new hires. To use AI to do core business instead of Karen and freaking HR work. And they even had to hire a few people into HR to replace some of the ones they got rid of to do all the, you know, the things that were not mindless functions that most of the Karens did. So this idea that we're moving into some sort of post-labor economy is just wrong. And you can look at technological innovation after technological innovation after technological innovation. And more people are employed today than were before all of them. Humble says, Humble Mechanic, the 80% suck, but the 20% leads to gold is exactly how I title and description every YouTube video I have made in this last year. I don't really know what he was commenting about when he said that. I don't know what I was saying, but I think it's completely valid. You know, it is valid. So if you want to clarify that before I'm gone, Humble, I'll say something about it for you if you're still here. Scott says, if you take the GDP of the world and divide it by the number of Bitcoin, does that give you a good value of each Bitcoin? I don't think so, because I think the GDP number is bullshit anyway. I'd say what you want to look at is what is even 5% of all the asset value in the world? There's people say, you know, 21 million divided by everything, you know, and that's Pollyanna stuff. That's like no one's going to own real estate at all anymore then or whatever. But if just 5% of invested capital in the world goes into Bitcoin, you're looking at something like $50 million Bitcoin. $50 million Bitcoin. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen in 5 years. I'm not going to say it's going to happen in 5 months, right? But it's going to happen. And the more money that pours in, the more attractive it becomes. And there will be a point where it's going to work like this. A couple large entities are going to get together and say, if we all do this, success is 100% guaranteed. And it, not the success that you and I consider, but what they would define as success. If the United States government right now simply made the determination, we're going to start buying 50,000 Bitcoin a month until we can't get any more, you got $20, $30 million Bitcoin happening just from that. Because other sovereigns are going to step it. Now, someone's going to do it. Someone that's not, you know, El Salvador, that's great. It made a lot of headway and all. But hell, Michael Saylor, and I don't mean Michael Saylor's strategy, right? Strategy B and his other entities. Michael Saylor, the man personally, probably owns more Bitcoin than the nation of El Salvador. El Salvador is small. I don't think people know how small. El Salvador is 6 million people. There's 8.5 million people in Dallas-Fort Worth. All right? So El Salvador is not as big as Dallas-Fort Worth. From a wealth standpoint, Dallas-Fort Worth is probably 100x wealthier than El Salvador. And that mattered. But when a G20 starts strategically putting Bitcoin on their central bank balance sheet, it's over. It's over, and it will happen. So I don't know that you could say the GDP of the world. Humble said, I was talking about AI and weeding through BS is what he really meant to say. You got 80% suck and 20% good. That's I do 80% of the work. It does 20, but it compiles my 80 way faster than I can. And that is how to leverage that tool. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. I want to remind you guys, you can help support us anytime you shop online by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Most of you are well into gardening season, but I thought it'd be a good idea to bring these around again because they're on sale again. Vivor's galvanized raised garden beds. These are so quick to put together. I mean, these are a one beer job. It's basically some wing nuts and some bolts and a beer or two and some music playing, and you have a 4x8 foot garden bed ready to go and be filled up. And, you know, the ones I have are 2 foot deep, and here I need that. I'm really going to tell you, $60 for the 11.9 or whatever, call them a foot deep, the 1 foot high beds, that's what most of you need. That will work great for any of you, and there's still time to get more production in this year or to get that production in and start conditioning that soil and getting ready to fall and winter garden with it as well. There is no way you can build a raised bed out of pressure-treated lumber for less money than you can build this, and it will be, you have to go haul it, and it will eventually rot no matter how well you take care of it. You put these in, they'll probably be around when you're ready to kick the bucket because they just last. They do because of what they're made out of and the type of application anyway. So check these things out again, galvanized raised garden beds from Vivor. Also, if you haven't picked up a copy of my book yet, Laws of Life, please do so. Tell your friends about it. If you want to know how to get into the mindset fully that I present this show from, read that book. It's not everything, but it's the most important things. It's the 16 core laws of life that have led me to where I am. It was hard fought, hard won knowledge. And those of you that, you know, if you're in your 20s and you hear me talk and you get pissy about it, but you stick around, I'll tell you something truthful. Good, and you are probably going to do better than me because you're probably ahead of where I was at 24. I probably wouldn't have tolerated an old fucker like me when I was 24 years old. I would have at 30, but at 20, I'm like, you don't know shit. You don't know shit. But turns out the longer you've been around, if you can also say during that time I've built success, the more you've learned. It's the way it works. We really are in the end. And I know there's a political elite and a, you know, people that were born into money and shit like that. But in the end, when it comes down to it, if you start at where most people start, the world still is a meritocracy. It doesn't mean it's fair. You tell people the money, it's not fair. I didn't say it was fair. I said it's a meritocracy. The system is what the system is. It has rules. It has rules that are made to be followed, rules that are made to be bent, and rules that are made to be raped. And it's up to you to figure out how to play the game. Some people figure out how to play the game, and they end up with a lot. Some people start off with a much bigger advantage, but they refuse to learn to play the game, and they end up with less. The choice is yours, so choose wisely. Make the most of your dash. Tick-tock, the clock ticks for us all. Catch you tomorrow with an interview. Are they gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.